and welcome to another podcast episode of The Powerful Patient. We're so glad that you're with us today, and I'm glad to have my co-host, Robin Martinez, with me today. Hello, Robin.
Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, and I'm glad to hear your voice. And I hope you're doing well.
Oh, yeah.
That is so good. We've got a couple of interesting guests today, Robin. You know, most of the people that we talk to here on The Powerful Patient are involved in some kind of international advocacy or national advocacy. They're usually affiliated with some type of major organization or extensively involved in something as a speaker or all kinds of things in advocacy. Today, we've got just two lovely ladies that are survivors of kidney cancer that live in North Carolina. Now, they don't live close to each other. They're actually several hundred miles apart. But they're survivors and very, very knowledgeable about this disease. They've learned a lot themselves, and we're going to talk to them about their journey, if that's okay with you.
That sounds great. I'd like to point out that when we say kidney cancer, we are usually, and in this case, we are referring to renal cell carcinoma, which is the most common type of adult kidney cancer.
Okay, that's good. And, you know, the American Cancer Society tells us that for 2019, there will be about 73,000, 74,000 new cases of kidney cancer. Most of those will be in men, about 44,000, and about 30,000 will occur in women. So women are in a minority in this, and so to be able to talk to two ladies, that's going to be very interesting. Now, let me first introduce Chris. She is a resident on the coastline of North Carolina. Chris, we'd like to welcome you to the Powerful Patient episode today.
Well, hi, Mike. Thank you very much. It's a pleasure being here.
Well, we're certainly glad you're with us, and we'll talk to you in just a minute. We'll let you tell us how your disease was found and what you've done about it in just a few seconds. And we also have Ann with us. Ann lives in the central part or the western part of the state of North Carolina. And she's about 90 miles away from her doctor. Ann, welcome to our podcast.
Thank you, Mike. I look forward to this.
Well, we're so glad that you're with us. Ann, why don't you tell us a little bit about your story, how you got diagnosed, and what's been going on with you for the last few years.
Okay, Mike. Like a lot of people, mine was kind of an incidental thing. I noticed that I had a knot in my left clavicle area, and luckily I was able to go to my doctor, my regular GP, quickly, and he sent me on to a surgeon who sent me on to have a CT scan, and as a result of the CT scan, he diagnosed me with kidney cancer. And luckily, we do have a local oncologist in the area where I live. And, of course, I went to him. And at that point in time, they already knew that I had stage four. And the bad part about it, it was wrapped. I had a huge mass, which was wrapped around my aorta. And, of course, my kidney was engulfed. So when I went to the local oncologist, my sister and I, and by the way, my sister is a blessing. She has just been wonderful. If I hadn't had her, I don't know where I'd be. And it's because of her partly that I went, found the doctor that I'm going to now. But the local oncologist that I went to, like I said, we went in automatically and said, hey, we're not going to stay here. You know, that was practically the first thing out of my mouth. And he said, well, there's this person in Charlotte, Dr. Amin, at Levine Cancer Institute. And this person had already been recommended to my sister, so we had his name on our radar. So we were excited about that. So luckily we got an appointment in Charlotte at Levine Cancer Institute. I met with the surgeon first, Dr. Stephen Riggs, and he was saying since the mass was so large, in my aorta area that he wanted to see if I could probably have treatment first. And he was good. He was saying that, you know, if I he could probably do the surgery, but he didn't want to do the surgery because the mass was so big. And fortunately, we agreed to that, and then we met with Dr. Asim Amin a week later, and he put me on Sutent. And I was on that regimen until I had surgery in January of 2015. So evidently the Sutent did its job. Well, after I had my kidney out and I was placed back on Sutent, I was on that for about another year, I believe. And then I started on Opdivo, and I was on that from 2016 until 2015 and until 2018. I'm getting my dates mixed up. And anyway, I've been off this Opdivo for 2 years. This is will be my five-year anniversary. Yay! I'm excited about that. And if my next scans are stable, I hope to reduce my CT scan times to every 4 months and as opposed to every 3 months.
That's a very good summary, and we appreciate that. And you've got a good story, so let's bring Chris on and then let her share that, and then I'll turn it over to Robin. And Joyce has joined us as well. Joyce, welcome to the podcast, and we'll get to you in just a minute, okay?
Great, thanks.
Well, hi, everybody. Mine is quite different than Ann's. In May of 2016, I went to my internist, who is a wonderful doctor. Now she's retired and married. But I went in thinking I had a problem with high blood pressure. And being as thorough as she was, she gave me a full physical, not just worrying about my blood pressure. And she was just poking around on my stomach, and she thought she felt something. And she said, I don't know what this is, but I think I'd like for you to have an ultrasound. So they set up an ultrasound, and I had that. And the ultrasound turned up that there was something in my abdomen. And they couldn't really tell for sure, but they thought it involved my kidney. Well, the ultrasound led to an MRI. And when I had the MRI, they definitely decided that there was a growth on my kidney. And I was immediately referred to a local urologist. He took a look at my MRI and my X-ray of my chest and decided that it was 90% sure that it was kidney cancer. And I said, well, what about a biopsy? And he said, your tumor is about 9 centimeters big, and I'm almost positive it's cancer. And he said, we could do a biopsy, but they're not 100% that, you know, sometimes we could get the wrong tissue to test and it won't give us a good reading. And he recommended a radical nephrectomy, which I had at the end of July in 2016. And at that point, I knew nothing about kidney cancer. I was told that they got good margins and everything, and I was thinking that 3 months later, I went in for a follow-up CT scan, and it was determined that there were nodules in my lungs and that they had grown. They immediately did a biopsy on one of the nodules in my lungs and confirmed that I was stage 4 and that the RCC had moved to my lungs. At that point, they decided that it was beyond their capability and they referred me to a local oncologist. My husband and I went to see him, and he had us in tears. He was quoting statistics that on average, people with stage 4 kidney cancer die after 2 years. And not only was he wrong about that, but he was quoting old statistics as well. But my husband and I left his office sobbing. And I did not know what to do. I did not know anything about kidney cancer. and I found this website called inspire.com, and I met a wonderful man on there named Mike Lawing, who I told my story to, and he directed me to a kidney cancer specialist that was 3 hours from where I live, and I'm very thankful and very appreciative, and I'm still going to that doctor. He's Dr. George at Duke University. A wonderful doctor, a caring doctor, and he's working very hard to help me. I have gone through high-dose interleukin-2 in January of 2017. I did two rounds of eight doses apiece. Unfortunately, that did not work. So in March of 2017, they moved me to Sutent. I was on Sutent for 9 months until I started experiencing growth. And after that, we tried ipilimumab and Opdivo and Yervoy combo. That I went through last year and found out in August that it did not work. And I am currently on a regimen of Cabo. I've just started off on 60, and I did 60 for 5 months, and I've just been reduced down to 40 milligrams, which I started this month.
Chris, thank you for that summary, and I want to acknowledge the fact that your husband is a retired Marine, and we'd like to thank him for his service to our country, and thank you for being a devoted wife to him. Robin? You're up.
Yeah. Okay. Chris, what are your current scans saying?
Well, my first set of scans on the Cabo showed good shrinkage. It was like 30 to 50% in some areas. And I was very encouraged and tried to stay on the 60 milligrams for as long as I could. But the side effects proved a little bit too difficult for me. And now on my second set of scans, which I just had at the beginning of March, I am stable. I didn't get any more reduction, but I didn't get any new growth either. So I'm thankful for that. And I have just started, just last week, I started taking the 40 milligram dose. And so far I'm feeling good. I'm not experiencing any side effects at the moment. So that's where I stand right now.
Well, that's very promising. We should probably say that the drug you're referring to is cabozantinib, which is also known by brand names, but we usually call it Cabo or Cabo just because it's easier.
I do take the short way around sometimes.
That's okay. We're used to it, but other people listening might not be. Mike, that was really a nice tribute to you. You are a lifesaver.
Well, it just happens to be somebody in the right place at the right time. That's how it works out.
Are either of you on disability from work?
I retired at the about 12 years ago. So when I first started, luckily, the lady that my good buddy told me that I needed to get on disability. So I ended up applying for disability. So I was 59 at the time when I applied for disability and was able to get it. So I wasn't actually working. I did do some contract work as a school psychologist. So, again, my situation was totally different from Chris's.
And Chris, how about you?
Yeah, Robin, I'm about 10 years younger, maybe a little more than Ann. And I was working for the school system, the public, the community college system of North Carolina. And I ended up having to take disability because of the side effects of the different medications that I've been on. I wasn't able to continue to work because of how they affected me. And I received disability May of 2017, so I'm fairly new. It hasn't quite been 2 years for me, that I've been on disability, and that's been a very interesting process for me. I'm still trying to garner up information about Medicare because I'm still young and I'm not of Medicare age, but due to the disability, I automatically go on Medicare after 2 years. So I'm trying to get information for that next step as I go along.
It's a whole new world, isn't it?
Definitely, definitely. You go from working 40 to 50 hours a week to going down to not working at all, and then trying to make sure that everything is covered under medical insurance and other things. So it's definitely been an enlightening time for me. Something that I had never even thought about before they pushed on my stomach that day.
Hi, Joyce. Welcome to the podcast. And have you got any questions?
Ladies, it sounds like you're both doing a wonderful job managing this. And I wanted to ask you a few questions about at the time you were diagnosed, did either of your doctors suggest that you should talk to an expert in kidney cancer before having any surgery or other treatment?
Well, this is Ann. I went straight to a specialist. I went locally to my oncologist here, but my sister and I had already decided that we were going to a major institute, whether it was Duke or Baptist or LCI. So we weren't messing around. We were going straight to somebody, a specialist.
Excellent. And Chris, did anybody suggest it to you?
No, and that's where the websites for Inspire and again smartpatients.com that I've belonged to both, but those websites helped me garner a wealth of information. I truly knew nothing about kidney cancer, and I had known no one who ever had it. So I was just assuming that once I had my surgery and had my kidney and tumor removed, that it would be over with. And I didn't know that it was something that I was going to deal with for the rest of my life. And I'm very thankful that I did eventually reach out to people that knew more and had more experience than I did so that they could guide me into finding a good specialist that I could get to and who has been wonderful in giving me treatments and advice and direction.
Great. I think Mike and I have had conversations about this, and Mike actually posted a really good paper on our website about getting good medical treatment for difficult conditions, especially in rural America. And, you know, in the big medical centers, that's one thing. They do know about it. But kidney cancer is one of those rare cancers. It's like number 8 on the hit list in America. And therefore, most urologists only see maybe 1 or 2 cases a year. You mentioned that your doctor quoted you out-of-date statistics. That's not unusual in rural America, unfortunately, because, you know, they're operating on older information because they haven't seen one for a year. Whereas if you go to a major medical center and talk to an expert in kidney cancer, you're going to get the better information first. And that's critically important, especially when they recommend to do a biopsy or not to do a biopsy, to do a total nephrectomy as opposed to taking out part of your kidney. Those are very important decisions, and they need to be made with care the first time.
Chris, you mentioned that your original local oncologist had you and your husband in tears. Can you tell us how different it felt and why it felt different when you went to a specialist?
The moment that I was able to get in to see Dr. George, who is my oncologist, Dr. Daniel George, he was so hopeful. And whereas the first oncologist locally that I spoke to, we weren't just crying, we were sobbing in his office. And I thought he was just so cold looking at me and saying, I'm sorry. And that wasn't something I was going to accept.
Right.
And so when I went to see Dr. George, it was like a breath of fresh air. He said, wow, he said, we're going to treat this like a chronic disease. He said, yes, you're going to have to deal with it. Maybe, you know, IL-2 will take care of it, but if not, we're going to treat it like a chronic disease. It's going to be something like diabetes, where we're going to keep you going, and we're going to do the best we can, and it's not going to be a two-year outcome. He said, I can't promise you how long you have. He said, but it's going to be longer than 2 years. I should mention that one of the reasons he decided to even try high-dose interleukin-2 first was because it was one of the medications that had a complete response rate, but also because I was so young and healthy, and
right.
he felt that I could handle the treatment for it a lot better than older patients that have tried it as well.
One of the things that that doctors refer to would be the cancer.gov site from the National Cancer Institute. And right now they're listing information from 2008 to 2014 on kidney cancer, that with local kidney cancer, the five-year survival rate is 92.6%. Regional, where it's spread to the lymph nodes in the immediate area around the kidney, is 68.7%. And with distant metastases, where it's gone to the lungs or to the lymph nodes away from the body, or maybe the liver or someplace else, it's 11.6%. And when you look at it, the statistics from 2008, we had just begun to start to utilize the targeted therapy medications that's so prevalent now. And so a lot of that information is really outdated, and it doesn't reflect what's actually going on now.
Yeah, we've only really had these new drugs for about 10 years. And the big centers are the ones that are working on it and that are up to date on the drugs. And anybody can go to clinicaltrials.gov and look for trials on kidney cancer just to find out who's working on it. But, for example, I'm an advocate with the kidney program here at Dana-Farber Harvard Cancer Center, which is one of the leading institutions in the country for kidney cancer. And one of the things we learned is that regular old-fashioned chemotherapy really just doesn't work with kidney cancer. Yeah. And yet we're still hearing about people who are being put on standard chemotherapy treatments like you would for breast cancer or other things. It does work for other conditions, but it just doesn't work for kidney cancer. But there are a whole bunch of new drugs that have come out in the last 10 years. There's a lot of action in this area, and that's a really compelling reason for talking to one of the top experts, so like Dan George, who are up on the new drugs, where to find them, how to get access to clinical trials, and to help you make smart decisions about your own particular situation. Like you mentioned, you're young, you're healthy. IL-2 has a very good track record for really good, enduring healing, but not everybody can tolerate the treatment, and so you need somebody to help you decide, are you a good candidate or are you not a good candidate?
Having that expert guidance makes such a difference. It made such a difference in the lives of Chris and Anne, and that's one of the things that we tell people. You don't necessarily have to have all your treatment far away from home, but you do want to have a specialist no matter how far you have to go.
And we may point out that this is not only true with kidney cancer, it's something that people with any type of cancer should seriously consider, because unless you're dealing with one of the more prevalent ones, such as breast or maybe colorectal, these other cancers have all kinds of developments that maybe the local oncologist is not familiar with.
I'm fearful for the patient, though, that will not speak up for themselves. you know,
right.
And they take everything that the doctor's saying. Chris and I are outspoken enough, I think, that, you know, we're going to go out and get the best that we can. And it's for that other patient that doesn't know to ask. They don't know the questions to ask because, you know, they're in shock.
You're absolutely right. And I think that's one of the particular values of the Inspire site and the Smart Patient site, just talking or even just listening in as other people talk about kidney cancer and find out what are they hearing from their doctors, what kinds of other options are there that I'm not hearing from my doctor.
Or even just getting even suggestions on who to see.
Mm-hmm.
I know when I log into those sites, and initially that person was me that was looking for answers, but lots of people contact those sites looking for a specialist near them or
right.
for a recommendation on somebody to see to get a second opinion. And I have learned all about these places all over the country and even in Great Britain and such that have become places to go to if you suffer from renal cell carcinoma. And I'm very thankful to learn that information.
That is so good. And ladies, we have almost completely run out of time. Each one of you has about 45 seconds to summarize something you would like to share with our audience. Chris, I'm going to let you speak first.
I promised my kids and my family that I'm not going to die from cancer. Something else may catch me, but it's not going to be cancer. So I say go out, find you a specialist, listen to their advice, follow it, and fight. Don't give up.
Great. Well said, Chris. Thank you for being with us. Ann?
Well, I would ditto everything that Chris has said. It's like someone asked me one time. They asked me about my job, and I told them my job now is to take care of myself. And I think that's true for all the patients. You've got to really, really, really be out there and be your own advocate. And I think one of the, on the Smart Patient site a while back, somebody asked about theme songs, and mine's by Rare Earth, and it says, I just want to celebrate another day of living. I just want to celebrate another day of life.
That is so
that's
good.
Beautiful.
Thank you both for being with us. Robin, final thoughts?
For anyone who needs to know where to find a specialist or how to advocate for themselves, please do join smartpatients.com. We're here for you.
Thank you. Joyce?
Thank you. What a wonderful conversation. This has been great to talk with these brave ladies, and I do hope that you'll continue to coach others because, as Chris said, not everybody knows how to ask the right questions. And we need to help each other to get to that spot. And it's worth the investment to go and talk with a specialist and make sure you're on the right track.
And we'd like to thank everyone for being with us on this episode of The Powerful Patient. Join us again for a future podcast where we talk to people that are survivors.